lost the weight upon my shoulder. Now it's easier to walk. I can see the road before me. I am not afraid to fall.
Okay, welcome to our podcast today. We had a great episode. Just kind of a different conversation that I thought was so good.
Yeah. It was so good, just about parenting. I would say the overall theme is like parenting neurodivergent kids and kind of the parent's journey in it.
Yeah.
You know, not just the child and the parenting, but more about yourself in it.
Yeah. Which I think is so good, because there's so many things about what to do with your child and what therapies to take him to, and, you know, how to parent a child with autism or different, you know, neurodivergent things. But she's really focusing on us as parents and how we can meet the kids where they're at. I felt like it was so helpful. And I think you could use a lot of her advice for any kid.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's really good.
It's true. It doesn't have to just be neurodivergent. She's and she's super wise and just fun and relatable. And yeah, we just really,
we really enjoyed the conversation a lot.
It was awesome. Yeah. And she also, so she has a book that just recently came out in the last few months. It's called A Hero's Journey in Parenting. And I think the tagline is like, parenting the child you didn't expect when you're expecting.
Yes.
Which we liked. Yeah.
Yes. Cause that was so me with my first child. I'll talk about Peyton
in
just a minute.
Yeah. We talk about that. Yeah. But, and so anyway, we'll link to like her book in the show notes here and other ways you can get in touch with her.
I just got the book Saturday.
Oh, you
so
did? Okay.
I need to, I want to start reading it, but
yes,
I think it will be really good. But so one thing I wanted to say, so because I have a child with special needs and was born, I've mentioned him a lot on the podcast. His name's Peyton. He was born, in the first few days of birth, he got meningitis, which is like bacterial meningitis. And then the meningitis caused hydrocephalus. And hydrocephalus is when your brain, so our brains like make spinal fluid all day long and reabsorb it. So, but after the meningitis, his brain wouldn't reabsorb the spinal fluid. So he has shunts that help drain the spinal fluid for him. So, but because of all of that, like he was an infant and then the shunts wouldn't work and we had to keep getting more surgery and shunts. You know, he was behind developmentally with walking and talking and crawling and all these different things. And then being able to talk and to communicate with me. So a lot of her, I talk about Peyton a lot in this episode and I was a little bit like, okay, he's 23 years old. You know, he lives with us. He's such a great kid. I didn't want to tell his story without his permission. Mm-hmm. So, I had him listen to the podcast and edit out the things that he wasn't comfortable with me saying. Cause I kind of felt like it's one thing I'm trying to relate to Margaret and her story, but then part of it is like, okay, but all our friends and family listen, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that he overall was very comfortable with what I said. And a lot of it was when he was little.
Yeah.
And now we kind of laugh at some of the little quirky things that I had to figure out as a parent. But I feel like Margaret gives such good tools that would have been so helpful for me as a young mom, trying to figure out like how to help this child that would have meltdowns and that didn't quite know how to communicate with me in a way that, you know, a kid his age would have, should have been able to in my mind, you know, it was so hard. But so I just want to talk a little bit about Peyton. He's just such a fun kid. I talk in the interview, he connects with mostly with humor and food. we love making treats. He's always sending me Instagram, you know, recipes that we want to try. And he loves to go, you know, some of his favorite places are like Waffle Love, or he loves this Loft Fountain restaurant by our house. He's and Crumble. And Crumble is his like favorite place. And we have a Crumble right by us. And so Peyton actually cannot drive. He has a seizure condition as well. And so he likes to ride his bike and be independent. And so he started this really cute, very creative. So one thing about Peyton is he's very creative. And when he's little, he would draw pictures and write stories all the time. And we have, I mean, thousands of pages downstairs. Oh, one day when I have the time, I want to put them all together in a book. But he would write and he would illustrate with little stick figures. And he was so good at, it would be a very simple stick figure, but you knew that the stick figure was jumping or running, or you knew if the stick figure was mad or sad, because he would do such a good job with like expressions.
Oh.
And anyway, he wrote all these books. And so he's super creative with his writing. And then when he got a little bit older and he got his like first iPod, like he'd make little videos that were always really funny and creative. So he's always been a creative kid. And his the creativity he's doing now is he has a Instagram page and he talks from the perspective of his bike.
Yes. It's so cute. And he does such a good job. I shouldn't even say cute. It's just like clever.
Yeah, it's very clever. Yes. That's a really good word for it. Because I mean, he's 23, so maybe it's not so cute.
To you as the mom, of course.
Yes, it's cute to me. But
every time I see his post, I'm like, oh, that was so clever how he did it from that perspective. I'm very impressed with his writing. It's always entertaining. It's fun to read.
Yeah.
You get to hear about the cookie of the day. So anyway, yeah, you explain.
Yeah. So it's called, he actually named it after, his bike that he calls the Zebra Cruiser. But it, his, if you want to follow him, cause he's really fun to follow, it's called Zebra_Striper22. And he talks like he's his bike. And,
from the bike's perspective.
Yes. So actually all the pictures are just his, the bike with a cookie on the seat.
Yes.
And the, whatever cookie he got at Crumble that day. But he'll tell you about the cookie and whether or not it's good or you should get it or not. But he also talks like he's the bike. Like, so the bike will tell, you know, the audience about our weekend or the fire we had in our kitchen or our vacation we took or his sister's soccer game or brother's, you know, baseball game or whatever. So it's really cute. He, I feel like he talks a lot about my mom who passed away, which is always really cute. He always, he, him and my mom are super close. So a lot of things remind him of my mom. So he'll put that in there, like a cookie that she would love or something that reminded him of her, or a song or whatever. So I feel like I have this little journal.
Yeah. That's what that I was thinking.
He has. Yeah. Yes. And he takes like, I don't know, he just takes time to really like write it out and have it be, he is a really good writer.
Yeah. He is.
And it's really creative. So anyway, I thought of that because we talk about him in this episode, kind of some of the things when he was a child that were difficult, that were very similar to Margaret's son who has autism. Mm-hmm. And so I could relate. And then I started, the more I started talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, like maybe I'm saying too much. Like, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've talked about this with our other kids.
Yeah, it is.
Because we talk with people that have things that are similar and we're like, oh wait, should we say that about our child? Like, this is their story. Yeah. So anyway, but, so if you want to follow him, he's super fun. And then you would know if maybe you should get a Crumble cookie that day.
Yeah, you can look at it as it's a fun account to follow and also kind of a little Crumble review all wrapped up into one. So yeah, he's very clever with it and we'll link to it in the notes of the show. Like after our description of Margaret, we can put a link to, to Peyton's account.
Yeah, so anyway, but yeah, Margaret is amazing. I learned so much from her, you know, with Peyton as well as with other just children in general.
Yeah, I think we just she's love talking with her. So we think you'll love this conversation. So
all right, welcome to the Beautiful Shifts podcast today. We have Margaret Webb with us. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Hi.
We're happy to have you here.
Yes.
Margaret is friends with Molly Bice that we had on. Is it Bice, right?
Molly Bice Jackson.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Molly Bice Jackson that we had on in the fall, right? Is that
what we had? Or was it January?
Everything gets, we really have a lot of episodes now. We're starting to like, oh wow.
We're starting to like categorize and
so, but anyway, she was so great. And, so yeah, Margaret heard of our podcast through there and we connected and we're excited to have you on today.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to be here. And, yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm going to read her bio and then we'll hop into her story. So Margaret Webb began her journey studying early childhood and elementary education at the University of Dayton. She went on to teach kindergarten and third grade. After hitting rock bottom during her parenting journey, Margaret attended several life-changing retreats. Amazed at the impact of what she learned to support herself as a parent, she went on to become a Master Certified Martha Beck Life Coach, Sage Fire Institute Nature-Based Coach, and an Equus-trained coach. This journey provided tools that changed her life as a person and parent. She is the author of A Hero's Journey in Parenting, as well as a tele-course and self-guided course, Parenting the Child You Didn't Expect While You Were Expecting, that has helped hundreds of parents. In addition to her own coaching practice, she has been the lead parent coach of the Differently Wired Club since its inception. She currently resides in Austin, Texas with her husband, 20-year-old son, and 3 Jack Russell Terriers.
Awesome.
Cute dogs. We love dogs.
All correct.
She's got a bunch of puppies right now.
Yeah, my dog had puppies. We have 6 puppies in our house right now.
So cute.
Yes, I've got 3 who are very unhappy because I put them in their crates on the other side of the house so that they would not disturb.
Mine are in their crate as well, so they don't.
Yep.
They just want to come in and be a part of it.
Be part of it.
Yeah. Well, that is, I'm excited to get into all of that in your bio. And I like what stuck out, I love the name of your book of the... the child you didn't expect to, you know, while you were expecting, which I think is probably most of us.
Yeah.
Because you have this certain view of motherhood and what a child's going to be. And they're like, wait, this is not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
You know, not that it's good or bad. It's just different. And it's kind of hard to know like what to do.
And especially when you have the layers of, because your son is your 20-year-old son. Is he autistic? Is that right?
He is.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm sure we'll hop into that. Like you tell us more about that, but you know, I think parenting, like Chantel was saying, isn't kind of what you're expecting in the first place, and then add on the neurodiversity and kind of some of those challenges. And so anyway, I'm excited for you to tell us more about that. So
yeah.
Yeah. Like, where would you like to start in your story? At what point?
Yeah. Or if there anything you want to add to your bio?
Oh yeah.
Just about what maybe like what you like to do or where you grew up or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love listening to that part of all of your podcast interviews. And so I grew up in Wisconsin. And that kind of feeds into my Midwestern sort of plow through things, work really hard, you know, stay busy. And that goes into my story of how that doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the University of Dayton because they had a really good program in education, and I loved kids. And that's where my passion was. I met my husband, we got married in 1996, and so we've been married, I think, 28 years, and I met him my senior year, and he'll just roll his eyes when he listens to this, but we've moved probably, like, you know, 18 times those 28 years, and so we bopped around. He's a neurosurgeon, and so we did a lot of that moving for his training. Exactly. But we landed in Austin when our son was 4, so we've been here 16 years, and absolutely love it. And so part of his journey, we were in New Zealand for the year Andrew was born, my son. Wow. And it was the most amazing year because, like, we were just kind of on this island out there just, like, doing things on our own. And when we got back, then some of the differences started appearing with his development. And we were just like, well, whatever. You know, he's just like Einstein. He's just super smart and doesn't see the purpose in doing anything. And it was kind of then that we began, you know, our journey in parenting. But, you know, I got stuck in something that I think so many parents, when parenting starts going in unexpected directions, what frequently happens is that we go into warrior mode and work really hard and try to, you know, like try to get our brains wrapped around it or try to wrap our hands, you know, just our heads around things that are going that aren't as we expected.
Yeah. It's so funny. I relate to your story so much because my son, my oldest, he is 23. He just turned 23 and he was born. Everything seemed fine. He was born on time. And then he got like a fever and wouldn't eat, took him in and found out he had, like, long story short, he had meningitis, and then the meningitis caused hydrocephalus. So he had shunts and delayed his, you know, development. And so it was like my very first child, the same thing. We came home. I remember being in the car with him in my car seat and thinking, I'm so happy. I got my husband. I got my baby. This is so amazing. And within just like 24 hours, it was like total nightmare, like back in the hospital, like something's not right. And, you know, and then ended up lifelighting him to another hospital. And then having your husband be a neurosurgeon, we've had lots of neurosurgeons in our life and are so grateful for him because he's had shunts that worked, shunts that didn't work. And we're so grateful for them because now they're functioning well at this point. But anyway, super interesting. Like, that is hard. Like, you expect this, oh, I have this cute little baby. I'm going to come home and we're just going to have this little happy life. And then either, I have this medical thing and you have these signs that something's not quite right. And so you're like, okay, let's fix this. Let's get in. Let's figure out what's going on. And you don't have control over any of that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
That's how I can read
it. I always say, you know, whenever anybody hears that he's a neurosurgeon, they're always like, oh my God, that's so great. I'm like, yeah, he's the person you don't want to have to need.
No, exactly. But at the same time, being so grateful that people went to school to be neurosurgeons or I wouldn't have my son. I mean,
exactly. You know,
so.
Well, I'm so glad that, you know, but how scary, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited to hear your story and kind of where you went with your son and all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, fast forward a couple of years from spending all this time in warrior mode, I essentially hit rock bottom. Like when you talk about the beautiful shifts, I would say that my beautiful shift happened when I hit rock bottom and I realized that I had lost who I was as a person while I was trying to support him. Back then it was probably to fix him, to make sure that he was, you know, doing everything I could to get him caught up with his chronological peers. And when I hit rock bottom, I was like, not only have I lost myself, but everything that I've been doing to support him, or everything like with my aim and my intention at being to get him caught up to his chronological peers, it wasn't working. And so it was essentially like all that energy and attention was just being wasted and spent in ways that wasn't doing any of us any good. And it was almost like, you know, I love when the universe kind of drops things into our laps that kind of wake us, you know, wake us up. And it was, for me, it was this magazine that it was like, find out who you really are, or remember who you really are. And it resonated at such a deep level for me because I had totally forgotten. I had been a teacher. And I was like the fun teacher who would stand up on the chairs and desks and sing and dance and, you know, just kind of like make funny songs out of whatever it was we were learning. And I couldn't remember the last time I really just felt that joy. And so I started reading. There was a book called The Joy Diet, and I just devoured it and was just like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm needing. And that led me to attend some retreats where the attention shifted from him to me, temporarily, but it did, where I was really like noticing what are my thoughts? What am I wanting? What is, and in doing that, I was learning all of these amazing tools and questions to kind of bring awareness and reflection, curiosity into my life. And then it's like, wait, this is like perfect for parenting this child where nothing was going as expected. Right. And something needed to shift. Somebody needed to change. And it wasn't him. Mm. It was me. I needed to change, and I needed to change how I was approaching things. And that's, I think, you know, that was one of those moments, those days where it was just like everything changed.
Yeah. I mean, I can relate to that too. I remember, I mean, I was a pretty young mom and I was just so stressed about him. I was like, okay, we got to go to this doctor's appointment. We have to go to physical therapy and we got to go to speech therapy. My husband's like, did you forget we're like a young married couple? Like, I know you're a mom, but you're also my wife. Like, we need to, like, we are focusing on him and we love him, but like, you need to take care of you and we need to take care of us. And then it really does make everything else easier and less stressful when you're not just zoned in on, you know, this child and can't think of anything else to help yourself, to help your spouse, to help your relationship, to help whatever. And you forget yourself. You really do, because you love this kid. You really want to do what's best for them. And you're so focused on that. You kind of lose who you are.
Yeah. And I liked how you said, you know, you were so focused on changing him, but you needed to change yourself. So I'm excited to hear more about what, you know, your realizations with that. But I did want, for just a little more context, at this point, were you thinking that he had like delays and disabilities, or had he been diagnosed with anything yet? You know?
Yeah. And how old was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he didn't speak until he was, or speak consonants until he was about between 5 and 7 is when he became intelligible. Okay. And so he would talk in utterances like, and I learned that language.
That's so similar to my son, yeah.
Yes, I knew exactly. I'm like, I'd be yelling in. I'm like, he wants the purple cup with the yellow straw. You know,
exactly what he was trying to say.
That's so cute.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, figure it out. You're a brain surgeon. Come on. Yeah. But so at 15 months, they started kind of, the doctor started asking questions because he wasn't babbling. We had his hearing tested. We, you know, just kind of explored all sorts of things. They mentioned autism, which really terrified me because he's 20. So back then it would have been 2004, 2005. And back then it was like, there was a lot of not, you know, there, it was chelation. There were a lot of therapies that were very intense that for a new mom were really scary. Mm. And so I wasn't ready to accept that. I was, again, you know, he's just smart. He doesn't see the point. You know, I made all sorts of excuses and tried to rationalize everything. And then, you know, I went back to teaching for a year after we got back from New Zealand while he was 1 to 2. And at some point, you know, I couldn't really deny that he wasn't doing the same things that his peers were doing in daycare. And then we did pursue, you know, like having in-home, we moved to Arizona for a fellowship year for my husband. And so I was at home with him. We did have like play therapists who came, speech therapists who came, and we did that for a number of years. And then we finally got like an official diagnosis when he was 4, and it was like, yeah, but I still wasn't really ready to accept it or, you know, look at it as a gift, look at it with mm-hmm. gratitude, think like, right. Oh my gosh, this is so great.
Woo. Yeah. Sometimes that's, yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
I feel like that's important to share because I think that sometimes, messages out there now are like, yes, you know, our kids are our greatest gifts and they teach us so much and they're our best teachers. And I really believe that. But there's also time to not leapfrog over, like, just figuring out the muck, you know, like,
yeah.
Just working through it and learning those tough lessons, I think then helped, and learning all of the tough lessons of realizing, man, like I said, however I'm approaching this isn't working.
Right.
And I feel miserable. And I had the same like conversation with my husband where he thought I was leaving him because I was like, you know, and we had to have these really tough conversations of we have to make our relationship a priority. Mm-hmm. We have to make us a priority because otherwise, like, we're not going to last. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it just said reminded me so much. He was like, hey, like, I'm
hello,
here.
I'm here.
And yeah.
Did you forget you're married?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I think sometimes too, when you're the primary caretaker of the child and there's so much medical stuff going on, it's easy to just zone into that, like you're saying, and kind of lose yourself. And everything else does kind of go to the back burner, you know, because they're your kid. It's probably right. Like some survival instinct as well. Like, I'm going to do everything I can, you know, to zero in all my
right, and then all those things make you exhausted. I mean, mm-hmm. mentally, even physically, you're exhausted. So then, when your husband does come home, you're like, because my son went through a stage where he would just throw major meltdown fits, and I was a young mom. I was so embarrassed. It felt like I didn't know how to be a mom. I would come home and cry and just be like, I don't know how to take care of him. Why won't you know? But I didn't know what was going on in his head. Where all I really needed to do, he's very. I would say we've never really got him. Some of his things are very much on the spectrum. So if he. When he was little, if I just took him to a store and didn't warn him that there was no car cart to drive, he would throw a fit. But if I just said, hey, this is the store that doesn't have a car cart, so we're probably just going to be in your stroller today, then he would be fine. But if he had these expectations, you know, or if I didn't tell him the schedule, he just wanted to know what was happening. If I just randomly stopped by somewhere, like he would just, but it took me so long to learn that. So I'd be emotionally and physically exhausted and not have that energy for my spouse and for you know, our relationship. So yeah, it's just so, it's hard. And
I
you have so to have
relate
those hard...
to the car cart.
Oh yeah. That's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. It was such a big deal. When I finally figured it out, I thought, yes, I got this. Like, okay, all I have to do is just tell him and then be like, okay, you know what? I'll make an effort to go to the store with the car cart because he loves it. And if I tell him, he's excited and then he's not going to throw a fit. You know, I walked out of stores with like a basket full of groceries because he was just melting down. And there's, I'm like, I know this isn't going to stop. And so I'm not even going to take, I'm just going to leave my groceries right here and I'm going to walk to the car and take him out of the environment and try to. But yeah.
Aww, and you're so young.
It's like if you could just like buy a car cart and stick it in your car, you would.
Seriously, I would have, I would have avoided lots of meltdowns. We joke about it now. Like he's so cute about it. And he's just like, yeah, I love that thing. And I don't understand.
That's so cute, actually. It's like cute in hindsight. But yeah, like, in the moment, you're just like, oh man. Oh. Yeah, so hard.
So hard.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think society supports like, you know, what you're like, you feeling judged or you feeling like, oh, I'm not doing enough or, you know, and they, and it's like society. And I'm hoping that nowadays it's different for people. And that's part of like my passion and mission, but it's like feeling that judgment and putting that pressure on yourself as a mom. Like I was 30 and I thought like, we really thought we had this parenting thing in the bag. Like we really did. And like, I wasn't young. I had taught, like I had taught.
Yeah. You were
so many
people.
Yeah.
You've been around and kids.
And it's like the judgment there of, oh my gosh, like I should know what I'm doing. And you know, I have no idea what's going on. And
that would be hard. Like this, the added self-judgment that you probably had, cause you were an educator and an expert and you probably thought, you know, but it's like what you said earlier. And I really liked how you said it. Just like the expecting the perfection and how, you know, like we're kind of going back to that, but I really liked how you explained that earlier, like, and kind of seeing if we can all talk about, you know, kind of how we're all talking right now that like, yes, parenting's great and we love it and we can learn from our kids and they can be our biggest teacher, like you said, but it's hard. Like there can be really hard in the process of it. You know, it's not all the beautiful part now. Like we get to it eventually and in hindsight, you know? So anyway, I liked how you explained that.
Which is where, you know, like as I kind of mucked around with all of this stuff and then I started learning these things to support myself, I'm like, I have got to share, you know, like things started to change. Like parenting felt better. Parenting felt easier. My connection with my son started to change because I was asking really basic questions that allowed me to be more curious and not as judgmental of myself, of him. Which then led me to not take the judgmental looks that people would give us. It's like the judgment's real. Like there are people who are like looking and rolling their eyes and saying, like, you know, you're too old. Yeah. You're too old to be acting like this.
Yeah. And that's hard. It's funny because I had this, my little boy and he's fine now, but well, I shouldn't say he's fine now. He still has sensitivities. He has, what's that called? Sensory processing. Did you know Asher has a sensory processing integration disorder or whatever? Yep. So when he was little, I mean, he would not put on a coat. He wouldn't put on anything with sleeves. And so it would be the dead of winter when he was two or three and he would not, and he would have these meltdowns. And even now it's funny because I thought like, okay, he might end up being on the spectrum, but that's kind of his, like the only thing, you know, that he has a little bit of speech delay, but other than that, he seems, you know, and he was in the NICU when he was a baby. And I think there maybe some of it has something to do with that, like the trauma of, you know, that whole experience. But, oh, just when you guys are, I'm like, yeah, how do I? Oh, yes. I remember
this
the meltdowns.
And
you also feel people will, if they haven't experienced it, I just don't think that a lot of parents can understand. Like, what do you mean he won't put on a coat? Like, like, can't you negotiate with him? Like, you know, and that went on for years.
Isn't there a sticker chart that you can put up?
Oh, yeah. We tried that many times.
But the occupational therapy did help a lot with him. And I think we did a bit when he was in preschool. And then we did a bit right before kindergarten thinking, okay, let's kind of prepare him, you know, and eventually, but he still doesn't like when people are too close to him. Like at school, sometimes he wants to sit back from the groups just a little bit, you know. And but anyway, I was, yeah, it's funny how we all kind of have our different way to relate to, you know, the, and you feel the judgment too. I'm like, this is, I've had, because I have four kids. So I'm like, what, how can I not, you know, negotiate with them like on this? How do I not know this? I've done this before. Yeah. So,
yeah. And I think just, it's so important what you're talking about. A few things, like we can't, there is going to be judgment when, if our kids have meltdowns, and that's okay. And we can't control that because we know what's going on. Like, you know, so nobody else does. So I think it's important for parents that are going through anything similar to be okay with that. And then just to, I'm summarizing here, like, and then what we've talked about is taking care of yourself, and that's okay. Like, don't feel guilty about that. You need time for yourself. You need, because, you, and I think for me too, like, it changed everything because we looked at him, you know, we looked at our kids in a different way. We looked at our spouse and ourselves in this way that was starting to make it work. And that it's also okay and maybe necessary. Like, you can't look at a parent that looks like everything's perfect and think that's just how it always is, because you have no idea either that maybe they have gone through the muck like we have to get there, because we don't know anybody's story. And what we do see is on the outside, and we can't be judgmental either way and be like, wow, how are they the perfect parent? Because we also don't know if that kid just had a total meltdown 5 minutes before we got there and we missed it all. But to be okay with not being the perfect parent, to be okay and know that you have to go through some hard things to get to a better place. And that's just how we learn. That's how, nobody's perfect or going to do it perfect, but there's all these different steps to get there. And it's just, it just doesn't happen, you know?
No. And I think, you know, when we approach things from a place of curiosity with each of the kids that we have, you know, like, and I did that. I only have one child, but like when I was teaching, it was like, you know, approaching each child the way that they are, what works best for them. Like, we're then there's just so much flexibility in our brains that kind of explodes of like, oh wait, yeah, like, just because this worked for my other two kids or my other three kids, like, wait, hold on, this is like, they're making me think about something in a totally different way. And I relate to the not wanting to wear a coat. We spent many years like just wearing pull-ups and no clothes, and which created some lonely times because it was like, you know, I didn't want anybody. I was still at a place, because that was before I did any of this work, but it was, you know, I was nervous about like any, you know, what would people think,
right?
Of like if they showed up. Or, and then like fast forward, we were in Ohio visiting family. It was snowing, and you know, he wanted to go outside. He didn't want to wear a jacket, and I was like, that's fine. I'm like, if when he gets cold, he will come in, he'll get a jacket. I've got evidence that that will happen. Like, you know, have fun trying. Right. Have fun. You know, like, I'm going to be in here just like,
I'll have your coat doing my thing.
But yeah, like, you know, you have fun trying with that and see how it goes. And of course, nobody could get him to do it until he was ready to do it. And now he skis, he wears all of the ski gear, he wears everything. Awesome. And he still has his, you know, sensory preferences for what he wears. But yeah, it's just everybody's, like you're saying, everybody's got their thing. And even if it looks like everything is happening perfectly, they might have a child who's just a people pleaser, an approval seeker. They might just be easygoing. You never know. Right. And, or they might be, you know, you might be able to, they might be affected by consequences or punishments or whatever. Mine was not. It was like, bring it. Yeah. Like, okay, all right, check this one, tried this one, tried this one. Nope. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, once you find that lane of who that child is and what works for them, and those were, you know, that was one of the questions that really helped me. There were three questions that I learned from a nature-based coach training that I did. And it was totally random. It was trying to build a one-match fire, like out at a park. And it was just go out and gather some materials and see if you can, you know, if I give you a match, see if you can make a fire. And I was like, okay, so put my Midwestern, you know, like, I can do this. I can figure it out. And I grabbed like these big sticks and, you know, tried and waxy leaves and tried to make, you know, it did not light. And there were three questions that were presented, and it was, what's working, what's not working, and what is one thing that you can do different the next time to see if you get a different result? Boom.
Yeah, that's good. Simple, but
those apply to parenting. Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, because you can't, like, I use it all the time. And use it with my son of like, okay, what's working? What's not? What can we do different? And that's where like the snowball of change really started happening. And so when I say that I, you know, learned these things from coaching or from these other experiences and brought them into parenting, it was like, wow, just total game changers.
Yeah. And I think if I would have known some of the things I had to learn the hard way, like before, you know, even something like that, because it was, okay, I tried that, that did not work. We tried, you know, whatever it needed to be, whether when I had the revelation of the car cart, like, oh, that is why he's flipping out. Cause he couldn't verbalize that to me really. But anyway, just if you have the tools, and so that's why I'm so excited about you having, you know, your book and these different ways that if people can read these things and listen to these things that give them the tools that they don't know about yet. Cause a lot of these things we just don't naturally know, especially if we have an atypical, like a neurodivergent child, like it's not what the other books are saying, you know, it's not how my other kids
other
work.
Books are like, your child is this age. They should be doing this and this and this. And then what do you do when that's not?
Right. And then my other kids kind of followed more of a pattern of those things, but he was my first child. So I had to learn, you know, so many things that I had to learn the hard way. And, you know, like we said, some of those things are good to learn the hard way, but how much better would it be if I had some of your tools before, you know, or as I was going through it when he was really young, because some things were so hard to figure out and learn. And I didn't have that like thought process of like, okay, that doesn't work. It's more like, okay, why isn't this working for him? They say it's supposed to work, you know, and say, you know what?
Try harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Try harder. Dig deep. You got this. You got to figure this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wondered, so like back to when you said you realized that you couldn't change him, you could only change yourself. Like, what were the things that you kind of let go in changing him? Was it hitting those milestones and like, or was it literally, were you still kind of thinking like, oh, he might not be, you know, might this diagnosis might not be real? Or was it more just like letting go of the ideal of the milestone? Cause I think that that is a really hard thing.
Yeah. Like, you want to say, oh, there should be talking, crawling. Cause my son was the same way. I'm like, why aren't you talking? Okay. Yeah. You are not crawling. This is super important. They say it's good for your brain and like, I need you to crawl or whatever. Yeah.
So I wonder, like, I think maybe parents listening, that might be helpful to know, like, yeah, what things should we let go of and what things in ourselves should we work to change and embrace? And those three things you said, as you said that, I'm like, I think you could pretty much apply that to anything in life. That's like the answer to life.
Right. Any situation.
Yeah,
so true.
Really.
Any like relationship, a job.
Yeah. Whatever. What's working, what's not working. And what was the third one?
What is one thing you can do different the next time to
get
a
what
different
can we
result?
Do different? Yeah. And it's just like how that just seems like the formula to improve anything. So I love that. I'm like, so simple, but
exercise,
so profound.
Eating, anything. Yeah.
We use it like my husband and I, we geek out on it after every trip because it's like, okay, well, this worked on this trip and this didn't work on this trip. And so the next trip we're going to do this. And we take notes like but yes, it is applicable to everything.
Yeah. And I'm actually I'm like, oh, I want to teach that to my kids too. Cause how valuable for them to learn that now, like just about different things in life,
and like not get frustrated with themselves or with somebody else. Yeah.
Just ask
and
yourself.
And peer relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So true. I mean, that's just, I love really it. Cool. And
so
I
got that from
a coaching
thing you went to.
Yeah, from my nature-based coaching mentor, Michael Trotta, you know, and it just, like, I took it in and just have been playing with it ever since. And so it's just 12 it's really years cool. of play, and it has never failed me.
Yeah.
We can go back to the question.
It was kind of two parts because I started talking about that and then remembered that and I was excited about that. But yes, so maybe back to the change thing and then we can go from there.
Yeah, I think what you were saying is just like meeting our kids where they are and who they are and dropping those expectations. Like, you know, expectations, really, you know, they're not that helpful. Intentions, like you can have an intention for something. And so that's a big part of like what I do is like, what is my intention for this? How do I want to feel? Or how do I want to feel as a parent? But then and then checking in with motivation, like, why do I want this? What is it going to give me that I don't already have? Or what is, if my intention is to sign my son up for a therapy, what is my intention for that? And why do I want that? What is my motivation? And I think those two things hand in hand, it's like really makes me question and look at things from a different perspective other than, well, this is what, you know, Mom X told me that I should be doing and going to see this particular specialist because blah, 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 blah. Like we had so many people talking to us about like supplements and medications and none of it felt good. And once I started really trusting my gut and listening to that gut feeling and asking myself, like if I had said, well, you know, okay, well maybe I should go see this doctor or maybe I should try these supplements with him. It was like, okay, why? Why do you want it? What is it going to give you? And does this really feel good? And so that was kind of like the initial start of kind of cracking, cracking apart the thought that everybody else knows best and really learning to trust myself as a parent because I was the one who was with him all of the time. I was the one who knew him best. I was like the expert on him. And for a long time, I was handing my power over to other experts. But they didn't like, I was handing power over to people who met him for 15 minutes.
Right.
And who didn't know him. And he, you know, there were times where he was super easy and super chill and very happy. You know, that was a lot of the times you put him into a doctor's office and all of a sudden things smell different. They feel different. The energy's different. And he's a different kid. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have one idea of what to do. And I listened to them for many years. And so if I could go back and tell my past self, my past parenting self, it would be, you know, oh, sweet girl, you know, I know you thought you were doing the best thing by listening to these people, even though you were, I call it pressing the override button. Mm. And so being mindful of when you press that override button as a parent and you start doing things that don't necessarily feel great, but you're doing them because you think you should be doing them, to really explore that, explore, and give yourself that time and space to make decisions.
I was thinking, it's so true. You are with him all the time. So you see the good, the fun, the, you know, the good parts of him. And then you see the hard, you're with him through the hard parts. And if you, and I've had that experience so many times going to a doctor, whatever it is, maybe it's a therapy and him having the same thing, like something new, something's off. And so for those few minutes we're with the doctor, he's at his worst, like kind of melting down, not paying attention to the doctor. So it won't even answer a question. Like, and then like, oh, something's really, you know, like something's really wrong and you need to do this, this, and this. And it's like, wait a minute. Like, you don't actually know, you know, the parts that I see and you don't know the whole him because you've only seen him. So I love that. The mother's intuition of like, what feels good for me and my child. And yes, I want to listen to experts. I want to listen to doctors and I want to take that all in, but it doesn't mean that any of them have the perfect solution or that they're right. But you know, what works for your child. And it's good to learn things from a coach and from books and from all the things, but not every child is the same. So not every technique's going to work. You got to feel it out. And you know, sometimes it's trial and error, but
yeah. And I think it's good that the doctors give us these options, you know, and the schools or whoever it is, because some people really do need those interventions and those therapies and the medications and whatever. But like you said, like following your intuition, because sometimes they'll tell you that you need something, but you only really know. Like I was thinking my example with my son Asher. So he kind of had a speech delay. And when he was like 3 or 4, I thought, well, I'm going to go get him tested for speech through the school system, because if he needs it, then, you know, we can get free speech help and stuff like that. And both they're twins. So I took them both in and they both got tested. Well, he did test to need intervention for speech, which was great because I kind of knew he needed that. But then he also, similar to what you guys said, I got him in there and he just did not interact because they tested him on everything, you know, and he scored so low on like everything. And they said, okay, he needs to be in this preschool, you know, basically the special needs preschool that will come pick him up or not pick him up. I would take him every day. And I was like, holy cow, he was already in preschool with his twin and doing really great in there. But I think being in that environment where he was uncomfortable, he didn't respond. He didn't test well. He was really anxious because he has a little, you know, anxiety, and especially with, I think, the sensory stuff. And, but for a little while, I just thought, but I've got to be a good parent. I mean, he tested to need this, you know, I was convinced. So I took him a few times and then he would have to go to 2 preschools on those days. And it was so stressful and long for him. And finally I felt kind of irresponsible, but I'm like, I don't think he needs this. Like, so I just took him out of it. And I honestly think the district thought I was probably being a little bit irresponsible, but I'm like, right. I know. And I talked to his preschool teacher. Yeah. And she's like, he's doing fine. Like, I'm really surprised he tested to need that. And then similarly in kindergarten, same thing, because he had that on his record, they would pull him out every single day from class and go do the special needs classes.
You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. And I pushed to have him retested in kindergarten because they're like, oh, we usually don't do those evaluations again until the end of the year. And I'm like, no, he's getting disrupted every day, having to be taken out of his class. And again, I'm appreciative of all these people at the school that do this and offer the services. And I think it's great, but I really had to push for it because he hated having to miss. And if he needed it, sure, I would have been happy for him to receive those services. So sure enough, he tested better in kindergarten and he only had to miss, you know, just for speech once a week. So anyway, it's just interesting. Like, again, I'm so grateful that they have these programs and it's available.
Yeah, and that's crazy. I didn't know that.
But it made you feel irresponsible.
Yeah. Exactly. Then I had to, at first, you know, I agree. And I even ignored it the first couple months of kindergarten because I thought, well, but can it hurt? Like, he's getting this one-on-one attention. But then I realized, but he was missing things in class. It would make him sad to get. And so I had to think, is this really like, what's the pros and the cons here? And deep down I thought, I think if I push to have him retested, he'll be fine.
Right. And I think that's good as a parent that you have the right to push things. Mm-hmm. Like, you have the right to say no, because the exact same thing happened to Peyton. He went in for like a whole test, like mental, everything, just to be ready for school for like his IEP or whatever. Mm-hmm. We waited in the waiting room for over an hour. And so I know his personality. He was going to have a meltdown either because his environment needed a change. He was hungry. He was tired. He goes back without me and does his testing, and he comes back with like a really, really like low score that this was before we moved. I think we were in California, we moved to Utah, and they get there and they're like so shocked who came to the classroom because they had read this report and it was so off. Mm-hmm. And so then same thing. I'm like, can we get him retested? He was just a mess that day. Yeah. Yes. Yes. He needs help. Yes. He has special needs. Yes. He needs these therapies, but it was so extreme that the teachers were and the therapy, they were so shocked. They were like, wait, this is not the kid we thought we were getting. He can talk to us and he kind of like makes us laugh. And we thought
he's
somebody
not flopped on the ground. Like,
yeah, like they thought like he was pig. Totally like nonverbal, like couldn't control himself.
And I was like, and I think that's how Asher's kindergarten teacher thought too. Mm-hmm. And I was so glad that she was backing me up and saying, yeah, he doesn't need to be missing all this class and stuff. And anyway, it's so interesting. And again, like I said before, I'm so grateful those services are there because, you know, it has
we've
helped
used
him.
So many
services. And the speech has been great. And you know, just anyway, but it has been, it's just a journey.
It goes back to like, you know, your child best.
Yeah. The intuition.
And to go with your intuition.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up. I hadn't even thought of that until you said that. And I kind of had forgotten. I mean, it's funny how we get busy in our lives. I'm like, oh yeah, I had that experience.
Happened a couple years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you leave, like you were saying, you know, you leave the, you know, you get these 20-minute appointments and you leave with the experts, you know, the experts telling you things. And what I like to tell parents is that you can filter those things out, like just to view it like a coffee filter and see what sticks and see what is still in there. And then like have the conversations with your partners, have the conversations with people. If you don't have a partner, have a conversation with somebody that you trust, where you can bounce off things of like, okay, am I being crazy? Am I being irresponsible? Mm-hmm. Because chances are when you take a step back and think about like what is actually going on, what is actually necessary, you'll just have greater clarity around what feels best. And also to give yourself that permission to say, like, I'm going to try this and see. Like, if it does feel like a decision that you want to make, to just say, like, I'm going to try this and see if it's a good fit. And that's the language that I would use with my son, is just, we're going to try this and see if it's a good fit. If it's not a good fit, or if the people, if I don't feel like they're kind and loving, then I don't, you know, then we're going to just say, not for now. But, like, giving yourself permission to say, this, you know, we're going to try it and see if this is a good fit, or like looking at my schedule or looking at our schedules, this doesn't seem like a good fit right now. Because you can always change your mind. Like if fast forward, you know, if there are therapies that are needed, if there are different services that are needed, you can always say, you know what, like, let's look back, you know, let's look into this. And I think so many parents feel like there's, when they leave those doctor visits or expert visits, they feel like there's an urgency of, I need to take care of this and I need to take care of it yesterday. Yeah. Because I'm doing my child a disservice if I don't. Well, definitely. Your child is the same child they were yesterday as they are that day. And the more that you can just, in fact, I encourage kind of, unless it's like an urgent, you know, like going to see the doctor and get it, you know, doing the shunts. Like there are certain things where they are urgent.
Yeah, they're emergency.
They're emergency. But so often there's things where you can feel like there's an urgency and start, you know, feel like you have to make decisions. And that's when I tell people to slow down, to almost go into like weird, awkward, you know, just slow motion operations of your systems so that you can give yourself that time and space to get clear about any decision that you have to make.
Yeah. That's
instead
good
of speeding things up.
Yeah.
Just which like is what I reaction. Did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
which really I think good. Is pretty normal. So it's like, we do have to have that reminder to slow down and think through it. Cause you are like are reactionary when it's something you feel like is urgent or important, or someone's told you you're supposed to do it. So you just do it. But I think, yeah, thinking through it, slowing down to make sure it works for your situation, for your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also works during tantrums and meltdowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
The tendency is like, okay, they're having a meltdown or a tantrum. And you're like, okay, I got to like put out this fire as quickly as possible. And it's like, wait, hold on. I'm going to slow down and see what is actually going on.
Right.
And you see this. So it's almost like there's this window that opens. And it's like, oh, they're tired. They're hungry. They're thirsty. They've been at school all day. They've had to be, you know, good all day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're done.
Yeah. They fit their wall.
Yeah. And I remember even, you know, especially when they were younger and they were twins, and Asher with his struggles with coats and different things. And I remember just telling myself, it took me a little longer to learn, but being like, it's okay to slow down and give them a minute. And if I'm late to whatever, like, I know I'm doing my best. Right. Other people may not know that, but I'm doing my best. Like if he's late to preschool today because the dressing process was hard, or because the eating or whatever it was, you know, just everything sometimes took a little bit longer, but you kind of have to just let go of the judgment too. And allowing them, because sometimes it just says, if we can give 10 more minutes to this, he'll get there. But if I push it, he's going to have a tantrum and he'll never get there. You know,
it's like, and bring it. Yeah. Like, you want to fight? Okay. We'll have a fight. You know, I can meet and beat your energy any day.
Yes.
Yeah. I know that like, well.
Not the judgment. Yeah. My son would not wear pants either. I mean,
short. Did I tell you, my kids would call Asher Captain Waist Down, because every time we'd walk in the house, he'd take off everything from the waist down. I don't know if I should edit that out, but actually it's like so funny. We laugh about
that's
it so much.
Funny.
Now.
Yeah. Like it's hilarious, where I just had to get over the fact, like if he's freezing cold, he'll figure out that maybe pants will work. But we moved to Utah and he would not start wearing pants. And I was like, okay, then just wear your shorts and be cold. I can't just do that.
Yeah.
And it's funny. He'd only wear like the basketball shorts. Yeah. So that we kind of had our like comfy shorts. So all my family would be like, oh, I'm going to go home and put my comfy shorts on. Like Peyton, like, why are we not wearing our comfy shorts all the time?
I've still become more like that. I'm like, if I'm not out doing an errand, I am in my sweats. Like, I might have a little of the sensory thing. Maybe he gets it from me. Who knows? but the same, like, he still like just wants to wear a comfy pant. And luckily kind of more of that athletic, like there's a lot out there, you know, for kids for options, to wear. Yeah.
Like the track. Yeah. Like our son, it's just like the track pants. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing an internship where he's working at a hospital and so he gets to wear scrubs. And so it's like, okay, they're comfy, they're loose. Yeah. So
yeah.
You
that's
know,
great.
It's, and sorry, and I feel like bad because you said his name's Andrew, right?
Yes.
Okay. Andrew. I was like, wanted to call him his name. But maybe you could tell us a little bit about him and his personality.
Like now. I'd love
you're saying
to hear.
He's doing an internship and obviously you've mentioned he's super smart. Like, what are kind of his loves or what's the things about him that are just fun or interesting?
Yeah. So he loves ceiling fans. He loves outdoor light sconces. And has learned like how to wire each of them. And so we have a whole room downstairs that is just filled with like light boxes. And he knows to like how to. And so we spent a lot of time just driving around neighborhoods, looking at everybody's light fixtures.
Oh, how cute.
And Halloween, like he could care less about candy. It was like the best thing that he got to like somebody would open the door. And then he'd like look in and see like, you know, if they had any entrance, you know, cool interesting lights. Chandeliers or ceiling fans.
Yeah.
That was like a huge thing for a while. He loves, we have one of my nephew's names is Chase, who's a Paw Patrol character. Oh. And so we've got only boy nephews. And so all of his cousins are boys. And so they began calling themselves the Paw Patrol. Okay. And so he's got all these Paw Patrol characters and he's 20, but he's also very much like in some aspects, he's still 7. Mm-hmm. In some aspects, he's 15. And so I think that's an important thing that he's taught me is like his chronological age might be one thing. But like really it's helpful to be aware of like, okay, developmental age in this thing, you know, in this area is this.
Yeah.
Developmental age in this is this. And I think with a lot of kids who are neurodiverse, their parents really do struggle because they can be talking about astrophysics or talking about coding 1 minute and then they're on the floor like having a tantrum or a meltdown like a 3 or 4 year old. And it's like riding that wave of like, okay, who am I dealing with now? Or what age am I dealing with now? But if you can do that, if you can kind of press pause in that moment and say like, what age am I dealing with? Then it can help you meet them where they are instead of thinking like, ugh, like you're 20.
Shouldn't act like this. Yeah.
You shouldn't act like this. You're too old to act like this. You know, you're 20. Come on, get up, do this. And it's like, oh, wait, hold on. Like he needs, you know, to act things out through these Paw Patrol characters. And it really, it bothered my husband for a while. And, you know, I'm like, it's not hurting anybody. It's not hurting anything. And like we've, you know, Rocky and Everest have gotten married. And so, and then they have a little Rocky puppy. And so it's helped him to kind of navigate some social relationship things. Which, you know, it's like, okay, whatever. So I drive him to work and I've got Paw Patrol characters in my front seat and it's like big deal. But so he's, gone on, he wants to be independent and so very much like a 15-year-old thinks that he's totally ready to be independent. We just built a house and we built a little like apartment for him, not knowing if he would be needing to live with us, you know, indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And so he's decided that he's going to move into that apartment. So he's been doing that for the past 3 weeks. That's and awesome. we're about to have a meeting where we're going to talk about what's working, what's not working and what we're going to do different.
Yeah.
So we're actually, you know, we're going to do that. But he really wants to be independent. And so part of that is getting a job and getting employment. And so he's doing a job transition program through the local public high school where he's working at the hospital that my husband works at. and is learning different aspects of different parts of the hospital, like a lot of, you know, stocking and restocking and doing things like that. But he loves it. That's awesome. And he gets up every morning excited to go and is happily tired at the end of the day. So,
That's awesome.
But he's just, yeah, he's
fun. Sounds like our sons are so similar because we're considering also building a extra home so that he can feel independent because he does want to be independent. In a lot of ways, he makes his own food and he can't drive, but he'll drive his, you know, ride his bike places. And yeah, he just wants to be an adult and wants to be independent because same thing, like we think he'll probably be with us forever. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think having his own place would be super like good for him to feel that independence.
I love that. And I think I was curious, do you mostly in your coaching work with parents with like autistic children or is it all like
any
kind of parenting? Yeah.
I started off doing any parenting and I still, if there's a parent and they're struggling, then I work with any parent. Because I think, you know, if there is an unexpected, I'm not going to judge what that unexpected is, whether or not it's like worthy of my time and energy. I love helping parents to feel empowered, to feel content, to feel, you know, to find opportunities for joy and peace. A lot of my being part of the Differently Wired Club, a lot of my coaching clients are parents who have some sort of neurodiversity, some sort of difference. And, you know, and it's fun for me to get to dive in and to play with them. And I love using the word play and not work because I think work is like rigid. There's a right, wrong. Whereas play is like, okay, we're just trying this and seeing how it goes. And yeah. It can work. It can not work. And again, going back to curiosity, flexibility. And so I love helping parents to remind themselves, especially when they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this is what's going on. I like to be the, you know, like, okay, let's just, we can bring the stress level down and it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know,
I bet that's so fulfilling. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking about how helpful and awesome it would be to have someone like you to work with that's like been through it and knows. And I was thinking like, I'm sure you help people like even just to have someone help you identify those three things that we talked about, like in whatever challenge you're going through. Mm-hmm. And then also that the age thing that you talked about.
I love that. Meet them where they're at.
Yeah. That's and so I think important. Sometimes like as a parent, when you're having kids go through these kind of things, it's hard to sometimes see your situation because you're so in it. So I think having someone like you that's first of all, has all this personal experience, but that could maybe help people identify like, well, it seems like your kid, you know, in maybe intellectually is this age, but emotionally maybe is more this age. Like, you know, just having someone to bounce that off of, I feel like could be so valuable. So I think it's awesome that you're there to help people. And
yeah.
And a lot of times they know, like I'll ask and just say like, how old were they? Like, if you could go back, how old do you think they were in that moment? And they're like, and in my mind, I have an age.
Yeah.
But I like it to come from them. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like, oh, five. I'm like, okay. Yep.
Yeah. That's
like, that's what it sounded like. It sounded like a 5 year old was doing that. And it's the same with like, I mean, being at an airport and like having a flight get canceled, you know, just watching people becomes very interesting because it's like all of a sudden people revert to these ages where it's like so there's like a just a whole bunch of teenagers just standing there yelling at like the gate agent.
People that have no control. Like,
they have no control and they're all egocentric and their lives are the most important. And it's like, oh gosh, we're here with a bunch of
we're all
60 year
olds. That's true.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so I loved when you said that, just meeting them where they're at, because I do feel like my son's very much the same in so many ways. I'm like, oh, you are 23. Like, yes. And then other ways, you know. And so when I recognize that, it's so much easier to deal with whatever's happening in that situation, for sure. And to be more understanding and have a little more grace for him in whatever's happening. So,
yeah,
so that's good.
Awesome. Well, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about your book for people that don't know.
Yeah, remind us what it's called.
Yeah, recently, right?
Yeah, it came out, It's been out for, I guess it was February 13th. So it's just, been out for a couple months. Okay. It's called A Hero's Journey in Parenting, Parenting the Child You Didn't Expect While You Were Expecting. And it is definitely parent focused. It's like, it's not, this is what you do with your kid. This is how you, you know, it's all about kind of my journey in parenting, but also these are the tools, the strategies, the questions that I learned along the way. And just like in a hero's journey, there are characters, there are, you know, who show up and who can help you. And so I like to, I've got different sections on shadow force characters and then hindering forces that come in, like control and judgment and how that impacts parenting. Mm-hmm. And then empowering forces, which is all about that reconnection with yourself as a person. So finding, you know, joy, gratitude, self-care, and not in the form of like, oh, I'm so grateful for my kids. It's like, what, you know, I'm grateful for my flare pen because like, I love flare pens. They make me so happy to have a whole, you know, jar full of like all the different colors and I get to pick them. And so it's like, you know, what makes you, what brings you joy and like allowing your, you know, just that energy is really attractive energy. And I think it's in those small little things. Like for me, looking at a picture of like an autumn scene, like autumn leaves brings, like makes my heart so happy. And it's like, I, for a while, I needed to have a picture of that to remind me, like, just look at that. Like, oh, how do you feel? Oh, I feel. And then it's just like this relaxation. And I think that energy then carries over to our relationships with our kids. And but starting there, you know, just like recognizing those different forces and the power that they hold, and playing with them, just playing with awareness of how they're showing up, what you need more of, what you need less of, and, you know, and playing with that. So
yeah, I love that because it could be so simple, like you said, just looking at a picture of fall or going outside and taking a breath of fresh air or whatever. But I think sometimes as parents, we feel like, oh, it's sacrifice and we have to go, go, go. And we have to do. And it only takes a second to, okay, what do I love? Like, do I want to sit here? Like I, like with, like say my morning coffee, like sometimes I'm actually drinking it while I'm like doing stuff. I'm like, no, I actually really
while you're
love
brushing
to just,
your teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Like sometimes I just want to sit like, and just and like enjoy yeah. whether I want to like read a book for a minute or if I want to just sit here and chat with my spouse for a minute, like it gives me so much joy. Like, why don't I take that time every single morning for just a few minutes instead of trying to like, because it makes me happy, mm-hmm. you know? Or yeah.
So. Yeah. But it's hard to remember sometimes to stop and do, but I think, you know, when we do, it's worth it for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah.
There's, I say it multiple times in the book and I feel like it is, I feel like a broken record, but I feel like it is so important that if you ask any parent what they want for their kids, like 99.9% of the time, it'll be like, I want them to be happy. Mm-hmm. I want my son to look at me and see I am the role model for my son of what it means to be an adult. And when he looks at me, I want him to see a mom who isn't happy all the time. I'm not like, you know, unicorns and rainbows all the time, but I want him to see somebody who does what they love to do, who loves to cook, who loves to laugh, who loves to listen to their podcast. And I love Armchair Expert too. So I was okay, good. Yes.
Just listened to one this morning.
Oh, yeah. You did? So great. I love it.
It's so good. But I want him to see that because if he ever, you know, if he, when he becomes an adult, I want him to know that it's okay to do that. I want him to see if he has a partner, I want him to know that it's normal for partners to take time to do things that they love together. And I take that very seriously because I think for a long time, I don't know if I was, if that's the energy I was projecting. And I remember there was one time when I was looking at something and it was just, it just hit my funny bone and I was like crying, laughing. And he came up to me and he was like, "Mom is happy." Aww. And I was like, holy cow, it's so weird for him to see me laughing that he stopped what he was doing and came over and did that.
Aww,
and I was like, that's it. Like, that's it. That's all I need to know, is that he's paying attention. Mm. And that needs to be the norm more than not.
Yeah.
And again, it's just pursuing, you know, it can be like really intensely focused on something that you love, but that energy is going to come across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I love that. And I think my son, like the way I connect with him is laughter. Like he just loves like comedies and funny things. And like he would watch, you know, that show, I think it's still on, the Funniest Home Videos.
America's Funniest Home Videos.
Like when he was little.
Oh my God, they would be such great friends.
Oh really? Did you love that?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, very important that we make sure we watch this because we just laugh for an hour and Peyton just, but he also would get so concerned about them falling, but also feel so funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just been like, so even now it's like Adam Sandler shows or, you know, Kevin Hart, whatever. Like that's how you connect with him, is you got to watch a comedy or have some really good food.
Yes.
It's all about the food and the comedy. And he's so fun.
I love it.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Sounds like laughter.
Laughter is so important, I think, for all of us to remember, even to laugh at ourselves when things are kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Or find a way to laugh for sure. Wow, this has been such a good conversation. I'm like, I have all these notes in my head. I'm like, okay, I'm going to read her book and I'm going to write these things down you said so I can remind myself.
Yeah, and the hero's journey, I just love the name of it and and just the different things that you were like, I'm like, I don't know if I've read a parenting book like that, that the way that just the words and stuff that you use in it. Anyway, it sounds really awesome. So I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, I've got a friend who does a podcast and she's interviewed a lot of parenting experts who've written a lot of really amazing parenting books. And that was the one thing. She was a person that I was most nervous to have read it because I'm like, okay, is she going to be like, yep, same old, same old. And she read it and she was like, this is unlike anything else out there. And I was like, okay, good. Because it's, you know, spent like eight hours writing it. It was really easy. Yeah. No, 8 years writing it. And I was like, okay. Wow. So. Yeah.
It's interesting because it does sound different, but at the same time, it makes so much sense.
Yeah. It's like not about parenting necessarily. It's more about yourself and parenting,
Is
that how you said? And I feel like that's what I need right now, honestly. I'm like, because I've read a lot of the parenting books. I know the strategies. I feel like I'm in a pretty good place, but like you kind of lose yourself a lot, you know, especially when you're so busy and you're so anyway, I'm excited to check it out and
to read it. Yeah. Yes. So you can just get it on Amazon and or anywhere else.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Yep.
Awesome. Okay.
I'm working on the Audible version.
Oh, awesome. I was going to say, but I do.
Because a lot of people like to listen to it.
Because we're parents, we're busy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we need to listen to our books on Audible.
I know. I always have good intentions to read books, but then oftentimes I'm like, I'm just going to get that on Audible because it's been sitting on my thing for 6 months. And
I know that I'm like, okay, I have a hard copy on the Audible
I often get both, but I'm like, well, then that means I really absorb it, right? So I can read it and listen and underline and everything. So. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, should we say, is there anything else you want to touch on before we kind of give the ways people can get in touch with you and do the wrap up question stuff?
Nope. I think we covered.
Okay.
A lot. Yeah, that feels good.
A really.
Yeah. I thought it was great. Yeah. I'm so glad we connected with you. Okay. So we'll put all the contact information in the show notes for everyone, but, her Facebook page is Margaret Webb. She will link over to her Instagram page. It's Margaret Webb Parent Coach. And then again, her book is called A Hero's Journey in Parenting by Margaret Webb. So just look for those links here and,
I'm excited. I'm going to order your book and read it. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of our podcast, we always ask, how do you find beauty in life after going through transitions?
Well, it was interesting because I wrote down, and you guys already said it, but what came up for me most was like not being worried about what others think about me, my parenting or my child. And that brought like the most amazing sense of beauty to an unexpected, where at the beginning I was so focused on judgment of what other people's thought. And then once I started learning more about myself and really playing with these tools and things, I realize it doesn't matter what other people think. Yeah, it doesn't. So true. And there's such freedom and beauty to that. And it allows him to be the perfect person that he is. Like, going back to perfect, he is perfect. He doesn't need to be changed. Right. Supported, mm-hmm. yes. Changed, yeah. no.
No, that's how I feel about my son. Yeah.
Yep. He's perfect, and I'm the perfect mom for him. And we, you know, we get through it, and it's messy, but it's also really beautiful.
Mm. Yes.
I love that. It's perfectly said.
Yes. We all need that reminder.
Yeah, definitely.
Care. Yeah. I always mm-hmm. yeah, feel better when I'm not focusing on that.
Yeah. And we've said this before in our podcast too, but it's like, even if you think about what people, they don't think about you for very long, even if they do. So what's the point in focusing on it too much? It's like, because we know that's how we are with other people. Everyone's so busy anyway. So why care so much about what other people think?
That's true.
Yeah. So, but yes, everything you said, I loved it. And yeah, thank you again so much.
This has been such a good.
Thank you. This has been, it's been so fun.
Yeah. And you might be our first Texas interview, I was thinking. Oh, yeah. I don't know if we've had anyone from Texas. So,
no, we're starting to make the rounds.
But yeah.
I do. My aunt lives in Fort Worth, Texas. So I've been there a couple times, but I do like Texas. Yeah, and I want to get to Austin. We should do
I want to do
trip
Austin,
to
Austin too.
And then we'll
so
come
fun.
Go to lunch with you.
Yeah. And I've been to Dallas. Yes. My uncle and aunt live there. And anyway, I really liked it. That was years ago. But yes, Austin. And we could meet up. So,
yeah.
Yes. For sure. Well, you guys keep having such amazing conversations with people. It's so fun to hear the two of you connect, and then also to get to hear the you know, connections and the conversations that you're having with the guests that you have on. So,
thank you.
Keep doing that.
We do love it. It's fun.
And it's been really good.
Cool experience. Mm-hmm. Every conversation is different, and every conversation is always better than I think. That's
what's
cool about it.
It's really cool. Especially like, even like with you, we barely even knew you. We just chatted a little bit over Instagram, but I find we're always just like so impressed with people, and just everyone has their story, and it's just so fun
to
hear
something new and take something with us every time. So
for sure.
Okay, well, thanks, Margaret.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and would love if you subscribe to the podcast and follow it along as we continue hearing more inspiring stories. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beautiful Shifts Podcast, where we will post updates with our latest interviews.
We'd like to thank the band We the Lion for giving us permission to use their beautiful song Move Along for our podcast. Take a minute to listen to the song and the lyrics and enjoy.
I find a way to know myself. All my thoughts are mine again. And begin to understand where to go. Now it's time to move along. Now it's time to move along. Take this journey as my own. Feel the strength right in my bones. All I want is to believe life is my own. Life is my own. I'll start again. My mind is free now. I can feel the truth. I'll take a chance, I won't be wrong. Yes, now it's time to move along. Now it's time.